Going to read from the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter 5 is Karma Yoga Action Krishna Consciousness, text number 7. Yoga yukta vishuddhatma vijitatma jitendriya sarva bhutatma bhutatma korvan napi nalipyate. One who works in devotion, who is a pure soul, who controls his mind and senses, is dear to everyone and everyone is dear to him. Though always working, such a man is never entangled. Purport. One who is on the path of liberation by Krishna consciousness is very dear to every living being, and every living being is dear to him. This is due to his Krishna consciousness. Such a person cannot think of any living being as separate from Krishna, just as the leaves and branches of a tree are not separate from the tree. He knows very well that by pouring water on the root of the tree, the water will be distributed to all the leaves and branches. Or by supplying food to the stomach, the energy is automatically distributed throughout the body. Because one who works in Krishna consciousness is servant to all, he is very dear to everyone. And because everyone is satisfied by his work, he is pure in consciousness. Because he is pure in consciousness, his mind is completely controlled. Because his mind is controlled, his senses are also controlled. Because his mind is always fixed on Krishna, there is no chance of his being deviated from Krishna. Nor is there a chance they will engage his senses in matters other than the service of the Lord. He does not like to hear anything except topics relating to Krishna. He does not like to eat anything which is not offered to Krishna. And he does not wish to go anywhere if Krishna is not involved. Therefore, his senses are controlled. A man of controlled senses cannot be offensive to anyone. One may ask, why then was Arjuna offensive in battle to others? Wasn't he in Krishna consciousness? Arjuna was only superficially offensive because, as Arimant explained in the second chapter, all the assembled persons on the battlefield would continue to live individually, as a soul cannot be slain. So spiritually, no one was killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Only their dresses were changed by the order of Krishna, who is personally present. Therefore, Arjuna, while fighting on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, was not really fighting at all. He was simply carrying out the orders of Krishna in full Krishna consciousness. Such a person is never entangled in the reactions of work. Yoga yukta vishuddhatma vijitatma jitendriya sarva bhutatma korva napni lalipite. One who works in devotion, who is a pure soul, who controls his mind and senses, is dear to everyone and everyone is dear to him. Though always working, such a person is never entangled. When Prabhupada was born, the astrologers looked at his horoscope and they made a prediction by the Bhrigu astrology. At the age of 70, he'd cross over the ocean, he'd open up 108 temples, and he'd be the defender of religion. So that's pretty good astrology. What's also significant is that Prabhupada didn't start out as an ordinary person. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he sent Prabhupada in order to give us a head start. That everyone takes birth, and the purpose of birth is to make progress, especially in the human form of life, make progress towards Krishna consciousness. And there's no better age of making progress towards Krishna consciousness than the age we're in now. Because although there's a lot of distractions, most of them are pretty insignificant. Previous ages, the fruit was so nice, people were so nice, the weather was so nice, everything was so nice that you weren't thinking of going back to the spiritual world because you felt that you were already in heaven. The spiritual world might be a distraction. But in this age, no one knows what's going to happen tomorrow or the next minute. Therefore, it's a perfect age to take shelter of Krishna. And to take shelter of Krishna means to take shelter of Krishna's mission, ultimately. Now, we may take shelter of Krishna As Prahlad Maharaj said, balasyaneha sharanam pitro nishingha, that a child, he has to naturally take shelter of his parents. He has no choice. But although the parents may try in so many different ways to help the child still may succumb to death. Similarly, nartasya chagadam. So, nartasya, one who is afflicted with disease, chagadam, the medicine or the doctor may be a cure, but you may have expert medicine, you may have an expert doctor, but still you may die. Udanvato amajatal now. And even if you have a perfect boat, like they said, the Titanic, but there's always a controversy over everything, including the Titanic, that sells books and makes documentaries. In any case, it was some boat called the Titanic was supposed to be unsinkable. And of course, Krishna proved that nothing is unsinkable, and he sunk it. Now, even if the child grows up, and even if the medicine works, and even if the boat crosses a river, everyone dies anyhow. As I pointed out, there was one worker on board the Titanic, and he was working in the boiler room, where the engine room. And when the Titanic, before it sunk, the engine exploded, and his whole body became covered with oil. So when he was thrown into the freezing cold water of the ocean, the oil protected his body and he survived. 1 month later, he was in New York and he was celebrating his survival. And he was drunk. And it just so happened it rained a little bit in New York that day. And there was a tiny little, one quarter of some centimeters of water between the sidewalk and the street. And he fell into that 1 centimeter of water or 2 centimeters of water, and it went up his nose and he drowned. So this is a recurring incident. Like the one lady was in Bali when there was some terrorist explosion that killed dozens and dozens of tourists, and 5 minutes before the bomb went off, she left that particular bar and she was saved. She went to Australia for some celebration, relief from the stress, and they were swimming in northern Australia, in a place near Cairns, and she was right by a sign which said, "Beware of crocodiles." At night, I guess she didn't see the sign, but the crocodile saw her. And they had her celebration turned into a feast, but she happened to be a part of the menu. So the world is a dangerous place. And especially in Kali Yuga, of course, in other yugas also we can find out things are not always as predictable as people would like. Krishna simply told his father to perform a sacrifice for Govardhan rather than Indra. Nowadays, if you did that, you can be considered quite, you know, worthy of respect. And Indra wouldn't do anything because no one, you know, any sacrifice people perform for Indra is so insignificant that he doesn't even take it seriously. But Nandamaraj's sacrifice obviously was quite elaborate and powerful, and Indra was missing it and he became angry. But still Krishna thwarted him by lifting up his Govardhan hill. Now you wouldn't expect if you were with Krishna in Vrindavan, in Dwarpa Yuga, that you'd suddenly be here in a little village in India and suddenly you're being threatened with being drowned in the middle of India by rain. Draupadi was trying to be dethroned, the Pandavas were put into the jungle, and someone tried to eat them, tried to put their house on fire. So it's not that only in Kali Yuga we have some difficulty. In every yuga, even on the heavenly planets, Vritrasura was stomping on the demigods. I mean, you imagine you perform austerities for thousands of years, become a demigod, you finally make it to the demigod planet. The first thing you know, you have to fight against this demon called Vritrasura. The next thing you see is this big foot coming down, and you're squashed. And you're back in Ljubljana. My God, what happened? I don't know if I want to go back there. So Kali Yuga is especially apt because there's so much disturbance. Queen Kundi had to pray for disturbance, but we're very fortunate. There's no need to pray for disturbance. So Srila Prabhupada came, and he came in the midst of chaos because there was a war going on. And as some people, for instance, they think that this coronavirus, there may be a virus, may not be a virus, but it's a scam in order for some people to take control. So there, people realized, especially it was quite intense. I grew up in the 60s. That there was something called a draft. And the draft wasn't when you open the window and the wind comes in. The draft was you had involuntarily go into the army, and then they send you to Vietnam. To fight for freedom. But very quickly they found out that actually this freedom wasn't to protect your freedom. It was to protect the freedom of the people who were trying to exploit everyone else. They're free to exploit them. And so most people didn't want to, anyone with half the brain, and there weren't so many of them. But many of the students didn't want to go and fight this useless war to protect the cocaine industry or the heroin industry, whatever else industry they wanted to protect there. And so it was quite chaotic. Many of the students, they didn't want to go to this war. And at the same time, they didn't like the materialistic society, which was pretty boring at that time. Could you imagine a society living in a where they only had three channels on television? There is no internet. And all the records were vinyl. You couldn't carry the music with you. Back, that was right after the dinosaurs were ceased to roam the earth. So people were it was boring for most people. All they had was sex and drugs. Of course, there were all varieties of drugs, so that was the only thing people studied in college at that time. That was called chemistry. The effect of different drugs on the body. And biology was exploring the opposite sex or other things. Everyone majored in those two sciences. So Prabhupada came, but he was wondering when he got here how he's actually going to be able to change these people. They're so much covered by ignorance and passion. How he's going to actually be able to affect them. So he prayed to Krishna that you're the super soul in everyone's heart. You have a plan. My spiritual master asked me to try and help fulfill this plan, so that's why I'm coming here. So if you make my words suitable to enter into their hearts and enlighten them, then it's going to work. Otherwise, I have no means to do anything. that just make me, help me, let me dance, let me dance, let me dance. In other words, Prabhupada perfectly understood his position as an instrument for Krishna. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Tasmat tvam utishta yasho labhasva jitva shatrum bhukshva rajansri dan mayayavataniyatam purvam eva nimitra matram bhavasava sachin. He tells Arjuna, because Arjuna was quite disturbed when he saw the universal form. Akyakimeko bhavan ugra rupo. He calls this form this horrible feature. So that's, we're living in this horrible feature. It's like you're in a fire and everything's burning in the fire, but your favorite television program is on and you just don't know whether you should leave the fire or watch the program till the end, in case it wasn't recorded. So you notice your, you know, your legs are on fire, but you think, well, I'm supposed to learn tolerance. And it's almost over, the program. So that's material existence, especially in Kali Yuga. So much problems, but if there's one drop of honey, then we think, oh, this is so nice. Like the man who was walking in the forest, and suddenly there was a tiger came to attack him. But luckily, there was a tree there, so he climbed up the tree. Unfortunately, he got one branch, and the branch broke, and he fell into a hole. Luckily, it was away from the tiger temporarily, the hole. Unfortunately, in the hole, there were venomous snakes who were crawling up to bite him. And unfortunately for him, a beehive full of poisonous Amazon bees landed on his head. And the bees were stinging him. And the tiger was trying to crawl in to eat him. Fortunately for him, one man came along on the other side of the hole and he had a rope. So he told the man, he threw the rope into the hole and told the man, "My dear sir, please grab hold of the rope and I can pull you out and save you." But the man in the hole said, "I'm sorry, but my two hands and legs are broken. I can't catch hold of the rope." So the man said, "Catch hold of the rope by your teeth and I'll pull you out by your teeth." He said, "Well, I don't want to do that." He said, "What?" He said, "Why not?" He said, "But right now, that beehive has the most delicious honey. And some of that honey is right now, it's escaped from the hive and it's right on the tip of my nose. And I know if I wait here a little bit longer, some of the honey will drip into my mouth and I'll have the most delicious honey." So that's material existence. In spite of all the problems of material existence, one is simply waiting for a couple of drops of honey. One's legs may be broken, the tiger may eat us, the venomous snakes may bite us, the bees may sting us, but still, if we can get that one drop of honey, it's worth it. So Prabhupada realized that, and he came to such an environment where people were very much interested, absorbed, a whole civilization, just like we're living in a whole civilization, just meant to distract us. I remember when I went to college, I had one friend who dropped out of college, but in the first year, but we were friends in our first freshman year in college. His name was Jeffrey Hickey. He later on got initiated as Jagadish, and he became a sannyasi also for some time, Jagadish Maharaj. And I was with my professors at the university, and we were talking, and he came up, and he said something about God, and I turned, "Wow, how can you say such a word in the presence of good company?" The three-letter word in polite company. So, such a society, even if you mention the word God, you could become fired from your job. And that happens. Prabhupada came to such a society. People were, at that time, they thought they were degraded. They were hippies who were degraded. Of course, people are much more degraded nowadays. or at least equal. There's a competition. That, and Prabhupada came to such a society, and he was able to blend in perfectly, at least with a certain class of people who were receptive to Krishna consciousness, and he was able to inspire them to take up gradually the process of devotional service. He was able to preach appropriately. We hear his original lectures. He didn't get into the same kind of philosophy he got into later on. He knew his audience, and he knew what would help them gradually advance. When some of his followers in 72nd Street, when he was in the Bowery, they showed some interest in Sanskrit. So Prabhupada immediately started classes in Sanskrit. Now, if anyone has ever studied Sanskrit, you'll find out it's probably the most, unless you're a very special person, it's very complicated. Slovene is kind of like learning 1, 2, 3. It's 1 plus 1 is equal to 2 compared to Sanskrit. Of course, there, Slovene is complicated too. I tried to learn Sanskrit for a year, and my brain was like frying, you know. Especially when you can't apply it, you know, what are you going to... How many people on the street are you going to be able to talk Sanskrit with? Without them calling for the people in the white coats to take you away. In any case, Prabhupada started to teach Sanskrit to the people who wanted, and they had some classes, but they gave up very quickly because they realized it wasn't going to be a simple couple of lessons and you talk with the demigods. But Prabhupada, whatever, at that time, if you read my book, which we recommend that you do, which was from Prabhupada, part of it is Prabhupada's explanations of health, on health to his disciples. So Prabhupada was a chemist in his early years, in his household years, and he learned the different medicines. And when his disciples had health issues, then Prabhupada actually helped them with their health issues. That was one of the reasons why I became interested in studying Ayurveda, because I saw how expert Prabhupada was in medicine. So Prabhupada, later on, of course, he stopped being the doctor to his disciples because he wouldn't have had time to chant his rounds. Everyone has a health issue. And when you find out you get free advice that works, you got a good occupation. So Prabhupada, he had, for some years, actually gave advice to his disciples how to cure different things. And then later on, Prabhupada, when he got an actual following which was interested in Krishna consciousness, then he stuck completely to Krishna consciousness to a large extent. But even at the beginning, Prabhupada understood his audience, and for the most part, he was just trying to explain to us that we're not this body. I remember one time Prabhupada was giving a lecture in Buffalo, and he said, "You actually believe I'm this body," referring to Prabhupada. In other words, Brahmananda used to try, at that time we had no tape recorders. We may have had one tape recorder. We had one tape recorder. But tape recorders were not so common, and recording was not so common. So we didn't have tapes of Prabhupada at that time. All we had was one telephone, because only one of the devotees had a telephone. It was pretty expensive having a telephone at that time. And if you called someone up, especially long distance, it was very expensive. So our temple president had a telephone, and the only way we could find out what Prabhupada was saying was when he called up Ramananda or someone else who was traveling with Prabhupada to find out what Prabhupada was saying in his lecture. Because we didn't have lectures at that time. All we had was the original three Srimad Bhagavatams. Rupa Noga would call up Ramananda or someone else and ask, what did Prabhupada say? And Prabhupada would say, we're not this body. And the next week he'd call up and say, what did Prabhupada talk about? He talked about how we're not this body. And the next week we'd call up and find out, we're not this body. So for the first year of the movement, one of the devotees, whose name was Burjan, he was a senior devotee in the temple next to Rupa Noga. He joined a couple of months before we did. And that was a big deal back then. So he was the only, Burjan, he was the only one who gave class three times a week. Unfortunately, we didn't have any Bhagavad Gita at that time. All we had was one little piece of paper with a verse and translation from, we didn't even have the Sanskrit. It said, as the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, so suddenly the soul enters into another body at the time of death, the self-realized souls are not bewildered by such a change. So I go up to the university three times a week, and he'd immediately start as the embodied soul, and he'd lecture on the verse without a purport. That the body's changing, but we're not changing. So I thought, well, there must be something more to their philosophy. And then one time, I went with Jagadish and a devotee named Bhaktibil and Bhaktinaris. Bhaktibil later on became a devotee named Bhagavan Das, if you know who Bhagavan Das is. He became the GBC for Italy and different areas. With France, yeah, France. And Irene was, became Krishnabhamani. And we went there, Jagadish and Krishnabhamani and Bhaktibil and Bhaktinari went there to see Prabhupada in New Vrindavan. And New Vrindavan was quite an interesting place at that time because there was no temple, there was a building. And the building was about half the size of the temple room here, where maybe 20 devotees stayed. And Prabhupada was visiting, he was upstairs in an attic which is about held his bed. And we got there and the first thing I did, because it was rainy season at that time, it was April or May, and there was a lot of rain, so New Vrindavan was 4 kilometers from the road, so we had to stop the car, and we had to walk there. And I got out of the car, and we didn't have shoes at that time, because that was karmi things. We didn't have karmi things. As soon as I joined the temple president confiscated all my non-devotional clothes. And I was given a sheet from literally a bed sheet, because we didn't have dhotis at that time. So we had bed sheets. Yellow bed sheets, because we didn't have saffron to dye it. So everyone had a yellow bed sheet, except for some of the householders had green red sheets, because householders could wear any color, so some of them had pink and green and all different colors. So we gave up our shoes, even in the winter, because we didn't want to identify ourselves with the materialists, which was quite difficult in Buffalo, especially when it went 20 or 30 below zero, and you were wearing tongs in the street for 8 hours a day doing Harinam. Your feet got a little cool. In any case, I took one step into the mud, and my tongue, you know what bathroom tongs are? You know, two prongs and a thing. So it stuck into the mud. And I had a hard time getting it out. So going for, it took us a few hours to get to New Vrindavan, although it was only 4 hours, 4 kilometers away. So finally we arrived there. This is a long, a lot of long story, but it was an experience for me to find out I'm not this body. Matter of fact, Bhakti Bill and myself went up to see Srila Prabhupada, and the first thing Srila Prabhupada looked at me and smiled and said, "So how do you like my jungle?" And then for the next week or so, every time we wanted to take a bath, we went down to a suragat. A suragat was named because they didn't have any place to take a shower. The only thing was a hill. They filled in some water at the bottom of a hill. The only problem was the rainy season, so the hill was all muddy. So on the way down to take a shower or to take a bath in the early morning, you got full of mud going down the hill. And then you bathed, and then you walked up the hill, and you got dirtier than before you went down the hill. Which is quite discouraging. But anyhow, it was interesting. So for a week like that went on, because Prabhupada was giving lectures, and during the lecture he said, as usual, he explained how we're not this body. And I thought, wow, I finally heard what Prabhupada said. Wow, that's amazing. I'm not this body. Boy, am I glad. So Prabhupada knew how to preach, and he preached very simply. He didn't try to make things complicated, especially in the beginning. He stuck generally to one topic or one or two topics, and he went over it again and again and again until finally someone at least remembered what the topic was. They may not have understood what he was talking about, but at least they remembered at least the topic. One time I was with Srila Prabhupada in Buffalo, and Prabhupada was talking to the Indian gentleman who had invited us to come, invited Rupanuga to come and open a temple there. His name was Dr. Lau. And there's Srila Prabhupada and Dr. Lau and myself in the room, and Prabhupada was trying to convince Dr. Lau that we should accept Krishna as God. And Prabhupada's reasoning and argument was that if you want to find out who your mother is, I'm sorry, if you want to find out who your father is, then you have to ask your mother. So luckily Dr. Lau was an Indian, so he could probably understand that philosophy better than most of the Westerners could. But Dr. Lau, he said, so if you want to know who your father is, your original father is, you have to ask the Vedas, and the Vedas say that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's your original father. So Dr. Lau, being an impersonalist, he could not understand what Prabhupada was talking about. But Prabhupada didn't change his analogy or anything. He simply repeated the same thing again. He said, if you want to know who your father is, you have to ask your mother. So if you want to know who the Supreme Lord is, who the Supreme Father is, you have to ask your mother, the Vedas. And Dr. Lau could not understand what Prabhupada was talking about. So then for the third time, Prabhupada said, if you want to know who your father is, you have the best authority is your mother. And if you want to know who the Supreme Personality of Godhead is, you have to ask your mother, the Vedas. And the Vedas say, Krishna is your father. So Dr. Lau still couldn't understand what Prabhupada was talking about. So Prabhupada rang the bell and said, can you please bring some prasadam? That was about the end of the conversation. And then Dr. Lau said, Swamiji, because Prabhupada was Swamiji, I wrote an article for the Bhakti Godhead magazine, and it hasn't been published yet. And I was thinking, oh, that's thank Krishna. And Prabhupada rang his bell again, and Purushottam, who was his secretary at that time, came in. And Prabhupada said, this man has written an article for Bhakti Godhead and has not been published. Can you find out what happened to it? Prabhupada was very diplomatic. So that was how Prabhupada preached, very, very simple, straightforward. If you couldn't understand A, he didn't talk about B. Or he tried to change the analogy. If you couldn't understand something simple, then he did not try to make it more complicated. With Professor Katovsky invited Prabhupada to come to Moscow. So Prabhupada was obliged to come and visit him. He was the leading professor at the University of Moscow in Indology. And if you can read that conversation, Prabhupada tried to talk to him about every single subject he could, hoping that he would understand something from the fact that we're not this body, to Krishna, to the existence of God, to Varnashram, trying to create first-class people. Dr. Lau, even Prabhupada went over, he said that actually there's no difference between your philosophy and our philosophy. In your philosophy, you accept a leader, Lenin, as your leader. In our philosophy, we accept Krishna as our leader. So our philosophy and your philosophy is you have to accept a leader and follow them. Now we're accepting Krishna as our leader, and wherever Krishna went or goes, that's where we're going to go. And you're accepting Lenin as your leader, and wherever Lenin goes, that's where you're going to go. If you want to find out where Lenin went, you can go to the Lenin Square in Moscow. You can visit his tomb. That's where he went. But even that, Professor Katovsky could not accept. So Prabhupada knew when it was the end, so he said, "Thank you very much. Can you please give me a taxi?" And Professor Katovsky said, "Swamiji, I'm sorry. I can't even get you a taxi." So Prabhupada was very tolerant. He tried to preach to people to the best he can. He was very happy that Krishna sent him at least devotees who like prasadam. He said when he was coming over on the Jaladuta, he was afraid that he was going to come to the Western world and tell people that you should not eat meat, fish, and eggs, you should not have illicit sex, you should not take intoxication, you should not gamble, and they'll say, "Swamiji, why don't you get on the boat and go home?" And then he was afraid that he'd get to the Western world, because he took two trunks with him when he came. He took one trunk full of books, the Bhagavatams, and he took another trunk full of oats, kind of breakfast cereal, because he was afraid when he got to the Western world there would only be meat. There wouldn't be anything else but meat to eat. So he was happy when he came here, he found out that actually they had vegetables here too. And they even had, as he said, they even had curry powder. He said it was 10 times more expensive than India, but at least they had it. And then he was afraid that the Western people would not like the Indian cooking, but he found out very quickly they loved the cooking. Except for one disciple, his name was Disha. And this devotee, he would not eat anything, practically speaking. So his mother came, and she was very concerned that this Striyadish, he would not eat anything, practically. And his mother was very concerned and came to Prabhupada, this is in 26th Second Avenue, and said, "My son won't eat anything. Maybe I should take him home." So Prabhupada said, "No, I'll personally take care of him." So every day, Prabhupada personally fed him chapatis and forced him to eat one chapati a day. And after about a week, he went up to 10, and in 2 weeks, he was eating 20. And then when he got to 25, Prabhupada said, "Stop." That's the maximum. So Prabhupada was very happy to find out that his Western followers loved prasadam, that none of them were going to die from starvation. Few of them died from overeating. Well, as Prabhupada once said, "The impersonalists may speculate day and night, but we'll eat our way back to Godhead." So Prabhupada was expert because he understood that verse from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. that whoever you meet, you should try to help them become Krishna conscious. And that was Prabhupada's expertise. He knew exactly, because he was in touch with the super soul, he was an instrument for the super soul. The transcendental energy that he manifested, the transcendental intelligence that he manifested, was just appropriate for everyone he met to inspire them, enlighten them, what was the process of Krishna consciousness and what is the process of performing it. So in that way, this transcendental movement spread very rapidly because of the intense empowerment that Srila Prabhupada received from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because of his intense desire to serve his spiritual master and spread Krishna consciousness. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Can you recall some example or story how Prabhupada took care of his disciples, how he showed compassion and care?
That's all he showed. Whether he had to personally take care of them or not. When he chastised them, when he instructed them, whatever he was doing is out of compassion and care. This idea that he personally had to do something extraordinary. It's like sometimes the devotees want to know, can you tell us something about some story about Prabhupada or some story about Bhaktisutra, some story, as if, you know, Prabhupada had some highlights in his devotional career. And we have to point them out and say, oh, wow, he actually became Krishna conscious for a few seconds. No, everything that Prabhupada was doing was out of compassion. Out of, you know, he didn't have to personally, you know, take care and feed his every disciple. But he, as an instrument for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whatever he was doing was to help every disciple. I forget who it was who had jaundice. It may have been Upendra. And Prabhupada was wondering, where is Upendra? And he heard that Upendra had jaundice. And then he went to Upendra and said, is anyone taking care of you? And he said, no. And Prabhupada said, well, why didn't you tell me? I would have taken care of you. So that was especially in the early days when there wasn't so much manpower. So Prabhupada would sometimes personally take care of devotees. But then when he had more responsibilities, spreading Krishna consciousness, it was quite impractical. And therefore he had to delegate that responsibility to others. And the most important thing he understood was to translate these books and to manage the movement to help the soul, not just the external body, but especially to concentrate on establishing this movement in such a way that it would go on for the next 10,000 years. So I'll stop there. Thank you very much. Grantarayashima Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.